Primally Pure just launched their Blue Tansy Body Butter, and it's more than a moisturizer. It's a full body exhale. This is their best-selling body butter formula, reimagined with calming Blue Tansy. It's a rich, whipped body moisturizer packed with barrier-building grass-fed tallow to deeply nourish dry, compromised skin. The texture is cloud-soft but ultra-replenishing. It melts in, protects against moisture loss, and leaves skin visibly smoother and more supple. And the scent? Soft Blue Tansy, lavender and sandalwood. Fresh, subtle, and elevated. If you already love the Blue Tansy deodorant or body oil, this is the perfect next step.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
Final four night.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by co-host Raul and Shu. Fellas, a little bit of grab bag, I guess, action today. Not a whole lot of news. A few things that are noteworthy, I guess. So we'll kind of jump in here a little bit. Going to talk a little bit about the schedule. Going to talk some rankings. So the 247 sports rankings, the final player rankings, and the team rankings just came out today on Friday. So we'll chop that up a little bit. React briefly to the NBA lottery, maybe a little bit NBA stuff, some combine stuff, talk about maybe where Cam and Slim might end up or projected to go here. And then, fellas, I guess we'll get out of here. We'll start with the schedule. So Duke just announced that they officially, inked a deal here with Illinois. So we're going to do a home and home coming up with them, which is kind of cool there. It had previously been with Arizona that kind of ran its course. And then now I guess we're moving to Illinois. John continues to kind of load this thing up here. I'll run through them and then we can kind of just briefly chop it up here. So now this adds to what we know so far. So you have Michigan State and Chicago. You have Illinois and Cameron. So Michigan State, Chicago, that's what, November 10th. You have Illinois and Cameron, November 17th. Then UConn and Vegas on the 25th. Then you have a little bit of a break here before you have Michigan in the Garden on the 21st, which I saw something about potentially that maybe Michigan didn't get the right clearance on this. So that could be subject to change. I'm not really sure. Haven't heard too much official news with that. But that one might put a little asterisk on that one. But then you still have Gonzaga in Motor City. So up in Detroit on the 20th in February. So that's kind of our late. You know, we had Illinois that we did that with. We had Michigan last year that we did that with. And then you still get the ACC-SEC Challenge, which I'm assuming should be on the road since we played Florida at home. That's like seven kind of like already big time, pretty marquee games there. Fellas, how you feeling about the schedule, this kind of approach again with John? Probably not going to predict an undefeated kind of slate there on that, but not ducking any kind of competition or smoke on that. So, fellas, just kind of some initial general thoughts here on the non-con.
Yeah, I mean, we thought he did, you know, a really aggressive schedule last year. You look at this, I think it's almost like he called up Gary Parrish and asked him what his top 10 is in the top 25 and one. Cause I mean, you got Michigan who Gary has third. You got Illinois who Gary has fourth. UConn, they have them fifth. Michigan State, sixth. Gonzaga's eighth. You still got the SEC Challenge, which I'm assuming Florida's number one. You maybe get Arkansas there. That's number seven. So, I mean, that's a hefty list of top 10 preseason teams that we're playing right off the rip, right?
That's five top eight right there. I mean, that's up to, like you said, I totally expect to get one of the the bigger draw, whether that's going to Arkansas, going to the Swamp, going to maybe Kentucky or something. I don't know.
Yeah, Kentucky hasn't got a great roster right now. But it's still got time. Duke,
Kentucky appeal, but
it,
right.
So but I think even Ben Swain pointed it out on the boards, like, it's kind of odd. We're in like what, the third year of the SEC Challenge, and we haven't played. Now I know we play Kentucky in, you know, every what, 4 years in the State Farm, but we haven't played them in the, you know, a home, you know, for somebody
in Rupp or in Cameron,
right? Right,
like that would be a pretty big time.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got three Final Four teams from last year potentially, assuming the Michigan game doesn't have to be swapped out for something else. You know, with Michigan, what happened there was they didn't clear it with their conference. So in theory, what would happen there is just you wouldn't be able to play a Big Ten school on Amazon Prime. They'd have to swap it out for somebody else. But I imagine it would be somebody that just as good or like kind of at that level.
And who would you SEC, guys go for? You got a team that you would swap it out for. It's not a Big Ten team, obviously, right? So
you could do like Houston.
Very good. Yeah,
that would be a good one. Just I'm thinking of the Big 12 there, you know. We already played Arizona a couple times, so I don't think it would be them, but those would kind of be the two teams that jump to mind.
Houston's up there.
You don't want to do an SEC one because you're going to get one in the challenge there. So like Florida, for example, you wouldn't want to set that up, and then potentially you want to know who you're playing the challenge first if you were going to do another SEC team.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably looking at like a Houston, Arizona, or like an Iowa State, maybe, right? Unless you just, I don't know, I guess it doesn't have to be like at the elite level. I mean, a Texas Tech, again, could be kind of interesting, right? To like maybe
a little revenge game. Yeah. Is Kristen Anderson staying in the draft, or do we know what's happening with that?
I've heard that he was, but I mean,
I think so. I mean, again, I guess they still have a little bit of time here. So,
Yeah, he did pretty well in some of the athletic tests and some of the shooting drills too. So, I would imagine his stock got a little bit boosted. I mean, I like it. I thought it did us really well last year. You know, we obviously set ourselves up great to get the number one overall seed by rolling through the non-con. I don't think that this year's Duke team will come out of the gate quite as strong, you know, just because we don't have a Cameron Boozer on the roster. I think they'll just be a little bit more of an adjustment period, you know, maybe even similar to even the 2025 team, which, you know, had a lot of talent, obviously, Cooper Flagg and Con Knipple and all that. They had a few stumbling blocks earlier in the year. So I would imagine it would be more like that. You know, I would be thrilled if we ran through that with no losses or one loss, but I wouldn't expect that as a fan.
Yeah, I mean, you have a lot more depth. I think there's still like a reason to be excited about this roster, but you don't have this like, oh, this guy's coming in and this is going to be the hub or the entire crux of everything.
Right. You don't have that surefire, like 20 point per game kind of guy.
Right. And so there's going to be a lot of role definition happening and just a lot of kind of figuring out like what this is going to look like. And this is a pretty big slate. Obviously, the UConn game, I think, is one that everyone kind of has circled for like a ton of different reasons. The history between the two programs, obviously what happened last year in the Elite Eight, Nick Kamenia now being a Husky too, right? And kind of like kind of hyping the game up a little bit. And it's in Vegas, like on Thanksgiving, basically. Like that's just going to be a massive, massive game there.
You know, that's happening while the Players Era Festival is out there. So there's going to be like,
There's going to be
a ton of teams and fans out there. Yep. Now, hopefully, you know, our game shows, because I don't know if you guys watched any of those Players Era games last year, but it seemed like there were, you know, dozens of fans in attendance for a lot of those.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would imagine that ours is going to be pretty
packed out.
Duke fans travel really well. So
UConn as well. I would imagine too, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just
how dominant they've been lately.
Yeah, that's the one right there. So, Illinois and Cameron, like that's cool to add that to, especially for next year to get the home and home with them. Like that's pretty cool. Yeah,
and they're going to be good, and they're returning a lot of talent. You know, they're obviously losing some key guys, maybe, but they should be easily a top 10
class coming in as well. Another load coming in there too.
You think John just being from Illinois, and I think grew up probably an Illini fan, like swayed that a little bit.
Him and Underwood kind of like are cool too, right? Like, because we had it 2 years ago. Yep. I think there's a lot of kind of mutual respect and just admiration maybe there. Yeah. Maybe that's not the right word, but
Underwood's like excited to not hopefully not lose by 40 this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Wish we could have played him again in the Final Four, man. That would have been that would have been something. But not meant to be. But
what SEC team would you guys most like to play and what venue? For me it would be at Florida.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have an alternate one there.
I mean, I kind of mentioned like at Rupp probably would just, you know, just to go to Rupp. There's just a ton of history there. And I don't know what the roster looks like or like if they're going to be any good. You know, Mark Pope is kind of like semi-flirting on the hot seat a little bit here with the Kentucky fans, but it's still Rupp. We've been to Arkansas before. They got a pretty good, they got a big time class coming in.
At Alabama. At Alabama. Would be cool.
That'd be another one right there.
I don't know about
Auburn.
You know, but I feel like Auburn's kind of taken a step back since Bruce, you know, stepped aside.
A pretty big step back. Yeah. Right? Like, I mean,
Tennessee's going to be an
exhibition. I heard there might be another Tennessee exhibition like this year coming up. So maybe
Tennessee would be a good one just because they've added a lot. Like they got a good. I think we were talking about it offline, like for Rick Barnes to be a defensive minded coach, like he added a lot of like offensive firepower, especially with like getting Juke Harris to sign there.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got a lot of scoring, which I think is probably a good idea for him. Like, because his teams are always so good defensively, why not load up on offense? You know, so I think they could be really good. I would imagine with the exhibition there, we might want to wait and see if they schedule us with them in the ACC SEC because we don't want to play them twice in 2 weeks. That's kind of pointless. But
yeah.
With the exhibition, do you think they would come to Cameron since we went there last year? That would be my feeling on that.
The return, just to run this back, return it. I know we played Texas last year, but at Texas could be, they had a pretty good portal class too. Like, that could be something to be. Vanderbilt doesn't quite have the like sex appeal maybe, but like at Vandy could be kind of interesting.
Yeah, they were good last year and they've got a good coach too.
So, crazy court. That's the like the elevated court.
Yeah. So, you know, not a ton of interest down there, but obviously going to the Swamp, I think would be number one, right? If you could run that. And you're maybe looking at like a 1-2 or a 1-2-4 or something in that kind of ballpark. So that would probably draw a lot of heads too, right? So, all right, folks, let's talk a little bit about the player rankings. So 247 just dropped their final player rankings here. Duke's pretty loaded here still, even though there's not going to be a lot of reliance probably on the class initially, at least that's the thought process. There's been some talk, too, about the class maybe being kind of down overall in terms of, like, elite star power. Mainly kind of if you're comparing it maybe to the last 2 years, there's no Cooper Flagg, there's no Kim Boozer, there's not that type of guy in there. There's really not even probably your Caleb Wilsons or like DeBonces or Peter, like that's not even available really either. But I still think that the class itself is solid. So we'll run through it here, fellas. We got Cam Williams, number 4, Daron Rippey at number 11. So he dropped one spot. Bryson Howard's a little bit interesting here. So he actually fell 6 spots, number 21. We just had Ben Pfeiffer on, and he was still really high on him. So that's a little interesting there. Continuing to see kind of where that plays out. Meyer, not quite, you know, most of us at this point. You don't know if he's going to redshirt or not, but that's been kind of floated around. I think he finished at like 93 or somewhere in that ballpark. Boom Boom is not really officially ranked, so he doesn't get a ranking. So Boonche does not actually get ranked here. He still gets 5 stars. He's 98 overall. If you're on the boards, if you've been following any of the chatter there from some of the national guys, they've said that he can contend to be a top prospect in 2027. He'd be the number one center. I don't think he's technically like a center yet. The projection is there for sure. But that at least gives you an idea of how highly they are on this kid. So another squad coming in. Duke finishes number 1 in team rankings in that. They're 6th in portal rankings. So you're bringing in that. We obviously talked about the returners here and Dame and Pat and Caleb and Caden, all those guys. So fellas, kind of what do you make of this? Kind of how are you projecting this thing out? So you bring in number 4, number 11, number 21. Where are you going with this thing? How are you feeling?
Well, you know, to come back to the Ben Pfeiffer episode, he mentioned that Bryson was maybe a little bit hurt by not playing at like one of those big kind of basketball factory schools. you know, and a lot, this it happens a lot of times with, you know, the sons of former NBA players. They don't play like, you know, as much. They're not showcasing themselves quite as much. You know, like if you remember the Currys, like never played AAU ball. And that's why they ended up as three-star guys. So I don't know if something a little similar there is going on with Bryson, but Ben did say like he thought it was crazy that some of the rankings had dropped him down to the 20s. He has him as a top 10 pick in next year's draft. So that's how high he is on him.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Boom Boom coming along, you know, doesn't really matter what is. I've kind of gotten away from relying on the rankings. You know, they're fun to have and something to talk about, but I don't think this class coming in, I don't think we're going to be like dependent on them right away, especially, which is nice to have. You know, it's a good class, but we're not like relying on two or three of them. Sar coming back, Gongba coming back, some of our other guys. So hopefully Blackwell, I'm sure we'll get into it. Yeah. Comes out of the draft and gives us that scoring punch. So it's nice to see for those guys. I did see the Bryson drop down six spots and thought that was kind of odd to see, you know, but it is what it is.
Yeah. And I think that there is something to be said about maybe the where you play, the showcase that you're in, maybe they just look at some of the talent around it or whatever. But I mean, you know, and I think the cool thing is there's, like you said, there's not really like, there's a scenario where none of these guys starred. Like that's out there, like that could potentially be, which is would be kind of crazy, really.
When's the last time we've seen that?
Yeah, I know. So the fact that you have them, and hopefully, you know, I think the expectation is for Cam Williams to still be really good. I mean, to still have like a really great opportunity. It might not be at the same kind of like you know, usage level or whatever that we've seen, but I think the advanced stuff, the metrics are going to still keep him pretty high.
He might be more of like a high level glue guy. It's kind of what I'm picturing. You know, blocking shots, getting rebounds, maybe hitting some threes. I think he definitely has the best path to starting just because of who's there, right? You know, you expect Dame Sarr to start at the three, so that kind of limits Bryson's playing time there. And then you look at the backcourt, Rippy may be limited by, you know, Caleb and Caden being there. So Blackwell, and John Blackwell. Well, yeah, exactly. So you know, definitely Cam has the most opportunity, I think. Maybe him and Boom Boom as well, but yeah.
Yeah, probably him and Pat to probably like kind of anchor that thing. But again, like you said, you got Drew and Boom Boom right there to kind of push this thing a little bit. And we haven't even mentioned Sebastian Wilkins, which is kind of maybe the biggest wild card on the roster in terms of like where you would project that, what's going to come from that. Obviously, we heard the staff was really high on him in high school and what he could be coming in and maybe kind of, you know, playing this thing out, but it's still hard to kind of project out for me, fellas. But
with Bryson, you know, one thing I will say is that Shire has had an eye for underrated guys, especially like shooting guard, right? You look at Jared McCain and Con Knipple, neither of those guys was like a top 10 player in their class. And they come in and they both, you know, Jared almost goes lotto, you know, Con Knipple is a top 4 pick, and they both like just outperformed expectations by quite a lot. So maybe you could get something similar with Bryson there.
Yeah. Maybe you can get, maybe we finally get what we thought we could get from Derek Whitehead or something of that nature. Right. Never really kind of got that from him. But so it's cool to see, you know, again, it's hard to put this up in super perspective, mainly because of the class where it is, but also just because of the way college basketball is. And there's just the reliance on the portal and the eight and just how things are so coachable. You know, maybe these rankings aren't quite as, don't hold the lids they used to. But all right, fellas, I guess before we get into some of this NBA stuff, before we're going to talk some draft lottery, we're going to talk some combine real quick before we get out of here. But first, let's take a little break. Let's pay some bills, and then we'll come back and go to the pros.
If your skin or honestly your nervous system feels a bit overwhelmed, this is your sign to simplify. I've been reaching for Primally Pure's Blue Tansy products anytime my skin feels reactive, irritated, or just angry. Blue Tansy is naturally this beautiful sky blue oil that helps calm redness, inflammation, and dryness almost immediately, and you feel it working. What I love is that this isn't just skincare. It's a full head-to-toe ritual. From their cult favorite Blue Tansy deodorant to their soothing collection and body oil, everything is designed to work with your body, not against it. Their formulas use real biocompatible ingredients. No fillers, no fragrance, just ingredients your skin actually recognizes and responds to.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
All right, so we talked a little bit about the college stuff. We'll get into the NBA side of things here a bit, y'all. Obviously, we had Ben Pfeiffer on talking kind of pre-lottery, what that's going to look like, some of his projections, his big board. Since then, we've had the actual lottery happen here. So we know that Washington, Utah, Memphis, and Chicago have the top four picks. That's locked in. Fellas, we only have two guys in here, so there's not a whole lot of conversation, but I think there's at least a little bit of interest here. And where what happens to Cam, where you see him, what fit you like here. I mean, to me, I was a little bit surprised when I was watching the lottery that it was almost just AJ or DP. And there was it just seemed that Cam was locked into that third spot. For y'all, I mean, do y'all agree with that? Is there a path for Cam here? Where do you like him? Do you want him to fall even further than three? Kind of where are you at for fits on Cam?
Well, we've seen pundits be wrong about this stuff before, right? Like heading into the 2022 draft, nobody had Paolo first. It was all like, you know, Jabari Smith or Chet Holmgren.
Yeah.
You know, and Paolo was mocked third, and then Orlando just really liked him, so they took him first. And, you know, you can debate the merits of that, like, but clearly, he was the right pick over Jabari Smith. I think we can say that. Whether you like Chet Holmgren more or not, that's fine.
It's hard
to
say with Chet because of Chet's in such a great situation too.
And he's asked to like play to his strengths, whereas Paolo's been in situations where he just has to carry the entire offense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't think it's at all guaranteed that that Cam goes third. But if he does go third, I don't mind that at all. Actually, just looking at the top three there, I think that's my preferred designation. Utah would be cool because obviously Carlos played for Utah and Will Hardy's a really good coach there right now. And him and John Shire already have a relationship, but they have like so many forwards. That's the thing there.
A ton.
Like think about it. They have Markkanen and Jaren Jackson. Both guys should probably be playing the four.
Yep.
And you got Walker Kessler at the five.
Yeah.
And then Flip you got like, Flip. You got like a couple others too. So it's just like, how is that all going to work? You know, and obviously, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think Carlos is a scout for the Jazz. At least I think I've read that or heard that somewhere that he still does a little scouting for the Jazz.
Would not surprise me.
Which is interesting. But I'm with you, Raul. I think they've got too many bigs to go that route.
Yeah, and you would think that they would want to get DeBanza because he had, you know, played out there at BYU. And
obviously, if donor at BYU, like the whole thing, right? Yeah. Like it's,
I think they might try to trade up to number one, and Washington might be able to or willing to do that. If they don't like DeBanza the most, why wouldn't Washington just trade down to two or three and get who they wanted anyway?
Yeah.
So that could be an interesting situation. Washington, you know, it's kind of a blank slate there. They do have new, kind of more competent ownership. And I think he would pair pretty well with Alex Saar. They both space the floor well. Saar's a really good defender, so that would like play well off of Cam. So I think that'd be fine too. Really, all those would be fine. Chicago, you know, their ownership kind of sucks, but they just brought in a new general manager. And of course, Carlos has history there too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it could be fun to have Cam in a big market there. So I don't think any of these outcomes are awful.
Have they announced the coach for Chicago yet? Because Billy's
thing, I don't think. So that's the one, because I actually like the Chicago roster fit with Cam there too.
Yep.
And you have the history, and it's the Bulls market seems like it would be cool. So I do like that. I saw something on maybe it was CBS or Bleacher Report or something about Memphis trading Ja and the third pick back to six to Brooklyn and then moving up, taking Cam. And having like Ja Morant and Cam Boozer in Brooklyn, that could kind of be interesting here.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, y'all, like the more that I think about it, I think there might be just a real path here for him to go one if Utah doesn't move up. Like if there's nothing happening there, maybe for Washington and the package just isn't there, like I kind of like the Boozer fit. I don't really love him in Washington, I guess, but I mean, they have pieces that they can move. Like they have older pieces they can move. You just bring Trae Young in. You have Alex Sarr there as well. So you have a little bit of like opportunity, I think, if you want to maybe try to make that competitive there. Like I don't.
And Anthony Davis is like expiring and they didn't pay much to get him. So they can just let him leave if they want.
They could just let that walk. And there's kind of an interesting, like, I'm pretty sure. AD was in Dallas when Coop was number one, and I think he was in New Orleans when Zion was number one before he went to LA. Right?
Yeah, he got so like traded kind of right like after that, but yeah, still technically
that'd be kind of like a weird little.
He's the number one AD. Pick whisperer, right?
Yeah, and then immediately leaves on all three of these. It'd be kind of like hilarious. So like I think that could happen. It hasn't really been talked about, but like you're looking at their roster, and it's like. If they're not really sold on AJ, because I think AJ or Caleb Wilson might be like the, you could plug that into Washington and maybe really find something. Cam's going to bring you up here and allow him and Trae to like maybe even make the playoffs or compete for a play-in or something if Trae's healthy. So I think there's a path for maybe Cam to actually get to number one here, y'all. But
you think he would want that playing in Capital One where he got his – broken in.
Ooh, that's a good call there.
Lost to UConn.
If I'm you're looking at this, I mean, are you really truly happy about any, like in terms of just like the basketball stuff? Like, maybe not. I mean, I don't know.
Memphis could be cool. I think Memphis would be fun.
If they do end up like drafting him and still moving off Morant, that could kind of be interesting too, just to see what that would look like. I mean,
it's a pretty clean flip, appearing, right? Like, Edie and Boozer works, and you got Coward at the three there. And, so, like, that's a pretty clean, like, front court fit there. Even if you kept Morant, that works. It's just a question of, like, is Morant washed now? Which is crazy to say for, like, a 27-year-old or whatever he is, but...
Yeah. I mean, he was good right before he got injured, I saw. But, I mean, he's just... There's just a lot of stuff there, right? So, it's hard to know. But obviously, Charlotte stays at 14th. I think the funniest thing, so the Pacers end up kind of like fumbling a little bit here in the draft, right? So the Clippers end up with this thing here. And it's, I don't know, man. We'll see. I don't love any of this stuff for Cam, though. I think if we're coming back to that, because, we'll talk about Slim briefly here. But
I got the full like draft order pulled up. And Isaiah is definitely in a nice spot here. I mean, we talked about it a little bit on the Ben Pfeiffer episode, how if you get drafted in the end of the first round, you end up going to a good team. But a lot of these fits are just pretty ideal. Like if you just go 26 through 30, you've got Denver, Boston, Minnesota, Cleveland, and then Dallas. But that was from a trade, obviously. But even that would be super cool. Obviously they aren't as good a team as those other ones, but these are all high level playoff teams where he would just like slot in perfectly. Above that, you got the Lakers, New York, Atlanta, Philly, if they want to redeem themselves for trading another Duke shooter.
Yeah.
They could get Isaiah there. So, I just think like for him, he's just got such a valuable skill set that like slides in so cleanly to like a competitive team. And we talked about on the last episode, he's used to playing off talent too. So my dream there is for him to go to Denver, but Boston would be cool too.
I would say Dallas and pairing with Malik Brown.
We're going to talk about that in a second.
With Coop. So
yeah. Yeah. Just, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Charlotte could really reach at 14, you know, if they really, really wanted to do that. I don't think that would
hometown kid
well, but maybe you trade down though. You could trade down for maybe two picks and grab him at 21 or 22 if you can make a move.
Yeah,
or something.
But, yeah, Charlotte's got a pick at 18 as well, so that might be a little bit more feasible.
That,
yeah,
that could play, that could work there. Yeah, and we could talk about the combine here a little bit, fellas. So obviously Cam had a great showing at this thing. I mean, I was looking at some of the like lateral drills that he was doing where he beat out Caleb Wilson, like the vert stuff kind of looked great. The spot up shooting here was really strong too. I don't want to give away all this stuff, but yeah, Cam obviously did his thing and I think might have like actually impressed a little bit, which is kind of hard to do maybe for a top three pick here. But I think some of the stuff might have popped at a level that wasn't really expected compared to some of the peers here. But anything kind of noteworthy for y'all that you want to kind of dig into here? We can talk about the scrimmage a little bit, shout some league and all that stuff, but anything that you want to kind of hit on?
I was surprised that Cam had a plus five wingspan. Like I didn't, you know, not that I thought his arms were short, but I didn't necessarily expect that. You know, he measured barefoot at 6'8 1/4, but with a 7'1 1/4 wingspan. So that kind of surprised me. So that effectively kind of makes him a little taller than he is. So I thought that was pretty nice. Isaiah's wingspan wasn't as long as I expected, but still in the positive, unlike John Blackwell, who has a negative wingspan. So.
Yeah, that's not great. But he actually played well. But
he played well in the scrimmage. I mean, he didn't test super well, like athletically. I'm not surprised at that either. But
how much stock do you guys put into all this, the combine stuff? Because I think it wasn't it KD that they were like, well, he couldn't bench press 125 pounds 10 times. Like, yeah, but he can shoot the piss out of the basketball.
At some point, he can put the ball on the floor and like get to the midi or like do whatever he wants to do. So. I mean, I think there might be some like fringe level stuff that like maybe you can go from like 35 to 28 or something, or like maybe you get a guarantee from a team in the second round that's like, hey, we want to draft in the second round, but we want to give you a guaranteed deal or something like that. Like, I think that's might have what happened to like Tyrese.
Progress. Right?
Like, something like that. Sion might be a guy that like, hey, dude, the combine really kind of elevated you. Outside of that, I don't think it matters a ton for the top like 10 to 15 guys, right? Maybe a little bit in the order here or there, but I don't see it mattering too much. You know,
I bet the shooting drills and stuff might matter a little bit more than the athletic ones. I know Coward really boosted his stock at last year's combine, but I do agree with you that it probably matters more for the more fringe first round guys. Like, one example that I just thought of was Miles Plumlee back in the day. You remember he got drafted in the first round. Nobody expected that. It's because he's like
the highest vertical of
like
a guy
who was 16. Like a 7, like a 6'11 dude who like had a 45 inch vert, whatever it was.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a guy like Graves, right? Like if a Graves can like really, you shoot the ball really well here or something, and then like, that gets you in, that keeps you in here. A guy like Blackwell, though, I mean, I'm not sure. I think he's played well, and I'm not sure it's going to move him up too much. I mean, he's a junior. He's entering his senior year. I think there's still a lot of concerns or a lot of kind of questions about the creation and like what that's going to look like and like how much he could do with that at that level. I don't think it changes his collegiate, you know, like projections or anything. Like he should still be like really awesome for Duke. Probably going to lead Duke in scoring if he comes. But I do think there are some questions in terms of like, what, 6'5", like, where can we play you? Like, can you really slide up or not? And so size is everything now.
So are you guys expecting him to come pull out of the draft?
I am. Yeah. Okay. I am.
I mean, to me, it's just like he's sitting there probably after pick 40 if he gets drafted, you know. 40 to the end of the second round, and none of those are guaranteed contracts, and whatever Duke is paying him or has set him up with, whether they're paying him directly or set him up with NIL, it's going to be more than that. So
I think
he's just going through the process.
Yeah. And I think there's still like, if you're really, really smart about this, you might also kind of even be considering that like there's a potential that I could do 2 years at Duke.
Yep.
And that's going to draw a lot of money. Or maybe it's not at Duke, but you could transfer again, maybe as a fifth year if that rule comes through. Like the money in this market for a guy like that is just going to, I think, offset.
And I do think that rule is going to come through.
Yeah.
Just not this offseason. It seems like next one.
Right. So, you know.
I think Malik probably helped himself more than Blackwell, you know, just because Blackwell, people already know he can score. They already know he can shoot. They kind of, those are known quantities, whereas Malik probably got to showcase a few things, right? Like he dropped 12 points in the scrimmage. And
plus
also
Gene on the Bucks, plus minus. Yep. Yeah.
Got some steals and stuff. He got a steal on Blackwell, actually. So that was kind of cool. And just also like even in the shooting drills, he did pretty well, which is like something that I think NBA teams are going to want to see, right? Like that's the kind of player who can really improve their stock, because it's like you're picturing him in a role like, okay, we want him as this versatile defender, but what can he do offensively? Well, if you come in and hit some corner threes in the combine, then teams are starting to picture, oh, he can be a 3-and-D kind of versatile big who can guard all positions.
Right. Especially in like an NBA tempoed offense, right? Where it's like Malik is that. Like he will quickly move the ball and relocate, he'll screen, he'll dive. So he can get a lot of jump point and you can hide it in a way that you just can't in college. I mean, even in the playoffs, like I'm watching Minnesota Spurs the other night, and like even in that, there's a lot of just like quick go action stuff. Like even in crunch time, as the game slows down, like the pace of that league is just far superior, or not superior, better, faster, whatever you want to call it. It's just different. And I think Malik could thrive, especially because it's like he could potentially guard 1 through 5 for you in a pinch on the four. Yeah. Like you probably don't want him guarding fives a ton, and you maybe don't want him guarding ones all the time, but he can switch fully for you. And you put that together, if you can shoot a respectable amount from that corner, there's a spot for you as like an undrafted, choose your team, go work out, go do their stuff and get picked up. Maybe even in the second round you could get picked up. But
well, Shu mentioned earlier he's got an invite to do workouts with Dallas, which would be awesome. He even talked about that, like how cool it would be to play with Cooper and Lively and Kyrie.
Yeah, so, hope Derek, man, really gets healthy. Yeah. Dude. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah, what did he play, like 2 games last year?
Yeah, and it's been a theme, right?
Yeah, because everybody's so high on him after his freshman season.
Yeah,
literally, you know, starting on a finals team.
Yeah, yeah.
And just couldn't stay healthy after that.
Yeah. To think about, when they lost the ball. Yeah, no, dang.
Yeah, Malik kind of gives me a little Lance Thomas vibes in the fact that he just, you know, was a kind of glue guy at Duke, didn't look to score, was unselfish. But, you know, Lance, when he got to the league, like, actually had a pretty nice 3-point shot on him for, you know, a couple seasons there.
Right. And I would say that Malik, you know, is a better defender than Lance ever was. You know, I mean, that was a similar role that they played, but I think Malik's defensive ceiling in the NBA is higher.
Yeah. Just through the hands, the way those hands are, and it's like, it's just a different dynamic. And there's a prototype for that. You know, you mentioned Lance Thomas, Taj Gibson's another kind of guy where it's like, I mean, you're probably not doing like the 18 footer thing these days quite as much, but if you can extend that to a corner three, that's ideally the same value.
Just those versatile defenders, you know, like, even on Dallas, there's Najee Marshall, on Minnesota, Jaden McDaniels, there's these kind of guys who can just really mobile, switch all over the floor, may not, you know, they may not drop 25 every night, but there's value in that.
Teams are trying to figure out a copycat OKC a little bit, and Malik does slot in as like, hey, one of these, like, can we bring 12 athletes off our bench? Malik could be one of those 12.
Yeah, right? You can easily picture Malik on OKC, honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Or even watching like a little bit of Minnesota, like they kind of junk it up a little bit. There's just tons of athletes everywhere. So, you know, there's fits, I think. And there's other teams that are probably wanting to be. If you're a Denver, you're probably trying to figure out, like, hey, we need to figure this out. Like,
we don't have enough athleticism. We don't have enough versatility.
Yeah. You got to figure that out. Charlotte is the same boat. Like, we need to get more athletic. We need to figure that thing out. So, you know, hope to see him out there somewhere. But, fellas, I guess we can kind of go ahead and get out of here for now. I mean, there's not a ton of content. We wanted to kind of keep coming in, doing some check-ins. We do got some stuff as we get deeper into the summer. We'll have some guests on here now that the dust is starting to settle a little bit. I'm sure we'll get Brian Geisinger on here at some point. We'll probably get John to come on, John Watson to come on and do more of an off-season kind of take away. We've already heard from Coach. So Coach Shire's already given us the go ahead. So we just got to figure out the logistics probably a little bit later in the summer.
He's still got to hire a coach.
So got to hire a coach. Got to get that in. And then we'll have him in and talk a little bit about this roster and about this offseason. And obviously we'll have to hit on a little bit of the heartbreak here, but I think he's just done a pretty incredible job so far in this offseason, man. It's pretty impressive to have us here in this position yet again to compete. So excited for that. Thank you all as well. If you haven't already, you can go back and check out our Ben Pfeiffer episode. That was a good one, talking a little bit about more of the draft stuff, the combine, where our guys could fit in and slot in, and how we kind of see a little bit of this current roster as well. So it's not all Cam Slim talk. If you want to go check that stuff out, he's really, really high on Bryson Howard, like Raul mentioned. We talk a little bit about Gongbo, a little bit of Dame Sola.
Yeah, he has Gongbo as a lottery pick too, if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, he's pretty high on Pat. So yeah, go check that stuff out too. So again, appreciate you all. Please continue, rate, review, subscribe. You can email us, thedevilstonpod@gmail.com. You can find us on X/Twitter @devilstonpod247. Keep the faces strong and the verb high.